Hello and welcome to the only podcast that thought Steve Smith is at it again. Sticky Wickets is back for 2021 and we're very sorry for the delay, but we are students, we've had a lot of work to do, but that doesn't mean we don't love cricket, so we're back. Toby, how are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, mate. Yeah, how are you? How was your birthday? I know it was last week.
Yeah, it was good. Didn't get much cricket stuff, which was your first question, but it was quite good. It was a bit weird with Corona, but we had made the best of it. But like, yeah, you know, Christmas is Christmas with Corona. And I think as long as you're safe and happy, that's the best you can be, isn't it? But like, let's start with the big England news. Moeen Ali ruled out the first test match with due to a positive Corona case. Let's get this straight. We are not blaming Moeen Ali for getting Corona because it is a disease. Let's not face it. It can happen. But now he's out, it does take away one of the frontline spinners for this England setup. So Toby, how do you think Mo's not dropping, because it's not a drop, but missing of this game will affect the England team?
I think it's going to have quite a big effect. I think he's not necessarily England's front line or main spinner at the moment, sort of, but he just his all-round batting and bowling that he would have brought to the side. He would have probably slipped in at number seven, bowled quite a few overs, hopefully contributed with the bat as well. And last time out in Sri Lanka, he had a fantastic series, I think, took a 5 for 2. Perhaps didn't score the runs, but just would have the possibility of him back in the side would have looked really good. So now I'm not too sure what's going to happen. They're probably going to have to play, I think, probably Curran, maybe Wokes or someone at number seven, just to try and strengthen that batting lineup, which last time out was so strong when we were in Sri Lanka. So I don't know how they're going to change it up a bit. What about you, Dom? How do you think it affects it all? What does your team sort of look like him now out?
Yeah, well, we will give our both our URN 11s for the England game, and I'm sure the selectors are listening. But without Mo, I'm not too worried. I've never been the biggest fan of Mo, and I know that's a bit controversial to say, and I think it's great he's representing his religion and all that. But as a player, I've never been the biggest fan. I know there's just something about him that I've never quite got on board with. Yes, he takes wickets, but I never feel like he's going to get a great batsman out. And it never feels like he scores good runs against a great opposition. Now, I know he has scored good runs, but I'm not too sure. If, just say, Root was to miss a game, that's a real miss in the England squad. And I know Stokes and Archer are not on this tour because of personal reasons for Stokes. And Archer just needs a break, to be honest, because he's been around the world in 80 days, it feels like. So I don't really feel that missing Mo is that big of a selection. But this is my URN 11, and I'll go over to you to see how we differ. So I've gone Sibley number one, Crawley number two, Dan Lawrence on debut number three, Root at four, five Bairstow, six Folks, seven Curran, sorry boy, I saw the smile, eight Dom Bess, nine Stuart Broad, 10 Mark Wood, and 11 the Jack Leach. It's quite a difficult place to sort of make a selection with the England lads. So I'd be quite interested to hear what your 11 is.
Yes, I think mine is very similar. I think the one thing when I first saw that, when you sent it over to me, Josh Butler is, I'd say, the big miss. And I know you said you'd explain it, why he's missing out. So I'd quite like to hear why, Dom, actually.
Right, hear me out. We're just about to play India, and I want Bairstow to have a go. If I was an England selector, Bairstow is someone who's always done well when he needs to prove people wrong. Very much so in the 2019 World Cup. He got into a real spat with the media. And as a former rugby player and as a very intense football man, I know he used to be, he likes to be the sort of given that sort of, you got one chance to prove everyone wrong. And I think this could be the chance for Bairstow to really hit good form. Now, I think Butler should be in the India squad. And maybe Folks, because he deals well in Asian batting conditions. But I just want to see if Bairstow could, just for this game, see if he can do it again, prove people wrong. Now, don't get me wrong, I think Butler's probably the better batsman, but Bairstow on form is something that's really, really good to watch. And as a ginger myself, I love to watch it. But yeah, I can see why you're a bit worried about Bairstow, but like I said, it is for the I'm trying to save him for the India tour. Yeah, someone I did mention is Dan Lawrence. Are you excited by this new debutant?
Oh, completely, yeah. I can't wait. I think he's got to be in there straight away. I think even if Butler is playing in there, one of Folks or Bairstow would have to go. And I do agree, actually, with you talking about Butler there. I think he does need a rest. I'd say, unfortunately, though, I think Ed Smith and Joe Root have both said that Joss Butler will almost 100%, unless there's some huge injury or something that happens, is going to be playing.
Oh, right. Okay. Ignore what I just said then.
I do agree with you. I would definitely give Butler a rest now, because they've said they're going to rest him for the third and fourth test in India, which seems mental, because you can't call that now if he's going to rest then. So I actually would agree with your original top six, I'd say. But knowing that Butler's playing, I would probably swap him with Bairstow. That is definitely some Surrey bias coming out there, I would say.
So weird. I hadn't heard this news. So they're going to drop Butler for the second and third?
Third and fourth, yeah.
Just when it could be 1-0 or 2-1 going into the final test in a really big series against an India side who will come on to are really proving people wrong, especially us. We're going to drop Joss Butler.
I know.
I can't get my head around that.
No, doesn't make sense. I understand they want to rest Butler completely, but I don't understand why you don't rest him for these two matches when it's obviously Test Championship, hugely important, and Sri Lanka aren't just a side to take lightly. They're a great side. We did beat them 3-0 last time over, but I think it's going to be a lot tougher this time with the likes of Stokes and Archer and quite a few injuries as well. But I think those last two matches and calling it so early, you're going to drop him. That's the big problem for me. They needed to just let, because you can't say in 2 months' time that you're going to drop a player or rest a player, because he could have scored 400 in the first four innings of that series, be carrying England to victory, only for him to miss the last two tests and we throw away a 2-0 lead and draw 2-2, or throw away a 1-0 lead and lose at 2-1 or something.
Yeah, the only thing, if I was to play devil's advocate, is maybe, and I've noticed a lot with the bowling unit, is that the ECB are really trying to rotate. And I think Simon Jones, someone who got injured very quickly, and Mark Wood especially, those sort of fast bowlers can get injured very quickly. And they're just trying to keep this, maybe not improve the mentality of rotating players. Because if we're honest, sometimes you look at a squad and maybe the 2010 sort of England squad who played pretty much the same lineup, they might have got, there was quite a few injuries in that team. So maybe they're just trying to avoid that. But I really don't understand the logic here of resting, like preemptively resting someone for games that could decide a series, especially against a quality team like India. That's really blown me out of the water.
I know, it's quite surprising, really. It's a bit frustrating. But yeah, so move back onto my team, I guess. I would have pretty much exactly the same side as you, I'd say. I'd say the big thing, if I was selecting it, would be you've gone for Broad and Wood for the first test match. I would just, second test match, swap it round, get Anderson and Stone in personally. I think they're both, you can't play to the bowlers too many times. They're just going to be sort of playing a containing role, which is what Broad and Anderson and lots of the bowlers have been talking about. So I think you don't want to bowl them too much, but you want to give them all a bit of a go before we go to India, and you can really see how they'll all bowl and how the conditions will affect them in India and Sri Lanka.
Yeah, it's almost a shame Jofra's not in this, because he'd walk into the team over Wood, which is a real shame, because Wood is someone I really enjoy watching playing. But I think Wood could be his sort of skiddy bounces, which are quite hard to duck because they're quite low, but they rise up quite quickly at the end. I think he can maybe throw his name back into the England mix. But do you think with all this, do you think England will be able to beat Sri Lanka 2-0, or do you think 1-1?
I would hope we'd win at least one test match. I think we definitely haven't got as strong a side as last time out, but we did win pretty convincingly last time, I'd say. We had four batsmen averaging over 40, and two of them were in the 60s last time. And we've got those three of those four batsmen, I think, Bairstow and Folks, both in the squad, who average in the 60s. And I think our spin attack is definitely weaker with now Mo and Ali. Jack Leach is the only person sort of likely to retain his place from last time, with Rashid out as well. Don Bess, I think, can be a fantastic bowler, but I'm still pretty unsure about him, and I'm not sure what to think. And I think this is a big tour, this one in India, to really for him to step out and push himself above Jack Leach. Because for me, I'd say Jack Leach is a definite better spinner. And the only real reason why Dombes is likely to sort of be the number one spinner is his batting for me right now, with Jack Leach not quite as solid a batsman as Bess. Well, where are you though, Dom?
Scored the greatest run in Ashes cricket, so let's not have a go at Jack Leach's batting.
I'm not saying that Jack Leach is a bad batsman at all. I'm saying Dom Bess is probably one of those batsmen who, one of those players who say could average over 60 or 70 with a bat for me. That's the one thing.
Yeah, I think I saw Dom Bess score a 50 at Lords, so he is a very capable.
Yeah,
but then again, I did see Jack Leach score a 92 at Lords. But
yeah, exactly.
It's quite a weird England lineup of bowlers, because who's the Surrey spinner? Because I've been seeing him quite a lot.
Amar Verdi, yes, yeah, he's a fantastic young guy. Him and Ollie Pope, and lots of other Surrey players, Will Jacks as well, who we talk about quite a lot, all came up in the same sort of year or 2 years. Sam Curran as well, through the Surrey Academy. And he's been fantastic for Surrey in the Red Bull side over the past 3 or 4 seasons. And I'd say he is probably England's, for me, best attacking spin bowler in the country right now. He outbowled Ashwin in one of the matches last season, I think it was. He took 11 or 12 wickets in a match. Ashwin took 5 or 6 and was looking threatening, but Amar Verdi just outbowled him. And I think he's a fantastic player. And I think the only reason perhaps he might not have been selected yet, one, his batting, he's worse than Jimmy. He'll be a number 12 batsman, I'd say. And also his perhaps defensive bowling isn't quite up to the level of someone like Jack Leach, who is known for just probing away at the same spot and just tiring batsmen out and then getting them with a fantastic ball later on. Amar Verdi likes to attack and likes to have men round the bat. So I think I'd like to see him come in to the side at some point this winter. But I think that particularly with Dom Bess as another off spinner in there, they probably don't want too many finger spinners, more likely to go for Parkinson or Crane, who I'd love. And I'd love to see a leggy in there as well.
Yeah, I think it is really difficult for England to get that right mix of spin. If we're honest, I'd say that's our weakest sort of part. I know Rory Burns is, I'd say with Rory Burns at the top, I think our opening partnership used to be our weakest, but now it's maybe our strongest with what we've developed over this summer. But the spin has never quite been, since Swanee, I don't think it's ever really gotten back to the heights of where it was. I don't think Mo ever really got to, and this is quite hard to say because Swanee was a great England bowler, I think the most successful England spinner. But it does feel like there's a different level, and if we are to beat India, it's going to be quite difficult to beat them with the spinners. Now, this lad from, sorry, Vidal, is it? Sorry?
Verdi.
Sorry, yeah. I'm rubbish at names. Do you see him almost, because you say he's quite young, and he's someone who I've seen a little bit of, and I've been impressed with what I've seen. Do you see him coming into the test sort of set up soon, or do you think it might be a developing sort of matter?
I think it's quite hard to tell, because England, although we don't have, I'd say, the strongest spin attack, we have a surprising amount of depth with the likes of Bess, Ali, Leach, all having played test matches, and then Parkinson and Mason Crane, who actually played the test as well, as leg spinners. I can't really see an easy way for him to sort of just get the opportunity, unless there's another injury or more corona positive tests. And maybe, or if Dom Bess perhaps really struggles and doesn't look threatening at all, I'd say Verdi would be the perfect replacement for him, because you have Leach at one end containing and Verdi at the other attacking, which is why I'd say Ali and Leach were so effective winter before last in Sri Lanka.
This is URN.
Now we'll be going on to the other matches across the world. England aren't the only one playing at the moment. Ireland have been in the UAE. They were put to the sword in a fantastic game. They scored a sort of pretty okay 269 for 5, with Balbirnie scoring 53 and Paul Sterling, great player, scoring a lovely 131. But the UAE struck back, winning by 6 wickets with an over to spare due to centuries from Rizwan and Usman. Dom, what happened?
Well, as the, let's say, resident Irish fan, being a quarter Irish and a big sort of, I mean, being ginger, it does help. The Irish, they've got a problem, and I'm not sure how to fix it. The Irish just can't get used to playing in slow conditions, and the UAE aren't a great side. They're not good enough to be at the World Cup, I don't think, in the current format. They're okay, and if they might be able to qualify for the T20 World Cup, which we've talked about on our live shows, go check it out. And I just think UAE were better at the conditions, and Ireland need to get better at that if they want to become a sort of bigger force in international cricket. And England, let's first say, we've never been the best at it, but the Irish have almost got a smaller player circuit, and they suffer from the same sort of problems we do. They like it, green top, being able to move the ball about, but as soon as it gets dry and dusty, it's quite hard for them, especially as most of them get sunburned in places like the UAE. It was great to see, because they were all just absolutely dreading sunburn. It was brilliant.
Yeah, not surprising. The conditions out in the UAE and some of the places are so foreign to Ireland and England, it's probably quite hard for them to get used to. Yeah, so unfortunately, though, that could be the only game in the series, as there's been an outbreak of corona in the UAE camp. This tour of the UAE was a warm-up for the World Cup Super League fixture between Ireland and Afghanistan. So, Dom, if the UAE game does not go ahead for Ireland, how do you think this will affect the Ireland-Afghan series at the end of the month?
Well, the Ireland-Afghanistan sort of World Cup Super League, for those who don't know, is almost a qualification to the World Cup in 2023, I want to say. And it is really important that Ireland had these games, because, like we were just talking about, they weren't good enough on foreign surfaces. And yes, Ireland can always create an upset, but if you want to get better, you've got to almost play better teams. And at the moment, Afghanistan are a good side, and Rashid Khan, someone who can just change the way a game goes, and as world number one T20 all-rounder and spinner, he really was someone that Ireland, if they played, could only get better against. And I'm really worried that if Ireland aren't able to play, I think, the two other games in this tournament, the Afghanistan game could be really, really troubling, because they won't have had that period to get out there to the UAE and play on those pitches. And I know the mood of the camp is quite tricky there, because the rules of lockdown are a bit more stringent for cricket teams, but it must be quite disheartening as well to be locked up in your room and knowing that you can't play cricket, something you love and want to do, and you're away from your family. It must be very difficult for those Irish players. So I do hope UAE can get better. And that's not me just being for the cricket sense, but because we don't want anyone suffering from corona. So best of luck to Ireland in the Afghanistan series, which we'll cover later on in the month. But I'm not too confident in Ireland's chances.
Okay, so prediction, if Ireland do manage to get these two matches in and perhaps start to get used to the conditions and maybe win one or two of these matches, what would you say the score might be against Afghanistan?
Yeah, I can't remember how many games there are. I think there was three or five. And I'm not saying Ireland will win, but they'll make it close. If that's 1-2 or 2-3, it will be a close series, because Balbirnie played really well and was unlucky to get out. But Sterling's innings was lovely to watch. It was a proper Paul Sterling innings. It was what you want from that man. And maybe they can get the win, and that would be massive for their World Cup qualifications, as they haven't been in the 50-over World Cup since 2015. I really would like Ireland to get some points. And I think, as they are sort of a developing country, I think it's always not a developing country, developing cricketing country. I mean, quite disparaging. Yeah,
it's not that different over there, is it?
I always want them to do well, and hopefully they got some points out of their tour of England. So they are a good side. So you never know, but I'd put my money on Afghanistan winning, but by only one match though.
Yeah, I'd say definitely from perhaps the perspective of not seeing a huge amount of Ireland other than when they play England. It does seem to have a surprisingly strong sort of top order, and it's perhaps just that middle order that might need to carry them through once sort of Rashid Khan gets on and starts bowling, that might change it up a bit. So now moving away from the UAE to the now COVID-free New Zealand, Kane Williamson has recently become the number one test batsman in the world, as well as New Zealand becoming the ICC world number one test playing team. As New Zealand have stormed to whitewash over Pakistan, beating them by 101 runs in the first test and by an innings and 176 runs in the second. Dom, what are your thoughts on Kane Williamson, the series, New Zealand in general?
I was so impressed with Kane Williamson, and I think we've talked about this off air. He just looks like a nice bloke. He looks straight inside, and we're going to be honest, we have our anti-Australian agendas, if you want to call it that. But he looks like such a nice bloke, and he plays so well, and his captaincy style is magnificent. And back when England won the World Cup, and I know we harp on about it a little, his team to play England was really, it was almost dramatic, because that was the side, the England based themselves on the 2015 New Zealand side that got to the final and lost. And Kane Williamson and Owen Morgan sort of talked about that, and it really was evident that we can play nice cricket and still be a good team. We can play exciting cricket. And I think Kane Williamson is the embodiment of what is now the English ODI style and formerly the New Zealand ODI style. So I think he is probably, there's no argument, he is the best batsman in the world at the moment. And it's great to see such a nice guy get given the adulation he deserves. And I think thumping Pakistan in the way they did was quite a statement. 176 runs and an innings in the second test. Toby, do you think New Zealand are they a good side? Like, how good of a side are they?
I think they've probably been one of the most underrated sides for the past of 3 or 4 years, really. I mean, we've been over there twice in the past of 4 years, I think it is, and have been just destroyed each and every time. They've been just so dominant. Their batting lineup scores runs whenever they need to. If Kane Williamson doesn't score runs, you've got Tom Latham and Blundell at the top of the order. Ross Taylor, who's just so experienced now and such a great New Zealand just all-round player. And then now their middle order, BJ Watling in particular, over the past couple of years has just come out of his shell almost and just scoring runs for fun. And then their bowling attack, obviously Southey and Bolt have been around for a while. And recently Carl Jameson, just probably the best find of the past 2 or 3 years, I'd say, in Test cricket.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. And I would be quite interested I'm not sure when the Test Championship ends, and I don't think New Zealand are in a challenging spot at the moment. I could easily see them in the future winning it. I'm not too sure on the times, but they just got, it does feel like they're a really complete good side. And if you look at England, I think we are a good side, but we're not a good side. And I think that's what New Zealand are at the moment. We haven't done a podcast in a few weeks.
This
but say.
Is URN.
We've been busy with Christmas and working because we are students. So I think we might need to look at what we've said in the past few weeks. And unfortunately, we both wrote off India. And to say we've got this wrong. They thumped Australia by 8 wickets on the Boxing Day Test match and made a miraculous survival draw at the SCG. So, Toby, let's talk about the Boxing Day Test match first. Australia really lacked a batsman. I think we can both agree on that. I think their top scorer was Labuschagne with 48 in a typical Labuschagne sort of dull innings. Whereas Rahane scored a beautiful, yet methodical, 112 going at a strike rate of 50. So it wasn't exciting, but it was still, you know, it was a good innings. India won the game by 8 wickets and only needed 70 to chase in the fourth innings. Toby, why are we idiots and why do we write off India? Because they're obviously quite a good side.
Yeah, I see. I don't think there's any record of us saying that Australia are going to win that easily. Definitely not. I'm not too sure, really. I'd say somehow losing Virat Kohli and Shami and all the other injuries have somehow made them stronger, which doesn't bode well for us in the next few months going over to India and then them coming over to England. I think Rahane really stepped out. He didn't have the greatest first game running out as captain, but taking control in that second game and scoring a great 100 as captain just shows how great a player he is. I think he's always been in the shadow of Kohli a little bit and possibly even Pujara, but it's just shown how great a player he is now, and he's really come to the front the last couple of games as captain. And I think that was his third game captain, and now he's captain 4 after the most recent one and unbeaten as captain, which which I think there have been talked about Cody maybe swapping captaincy, but I can't see it happening.
I can't see Cody giving up the captaincy. He is that sort of face of Indian cricket, but I think you made a really good point there at the start. If you were to say, right, we're going to take away your four best players and you're going to get better, it doesn't make sense. And it really doesn't make sense. So I'm a bit worried, because if they're playing like this without their players, maybe there's almost an argument to say that losing players makes you galvanise behind. I don't know, that's true in some, in football that sometimes happens. If someone like Ronaldo goes down, sometimes who they play better, but it's very rare to do it over five long days. And it was a real dominant performance. And then Australia just collapsed. Did you get to see much of the Australian collapse?
I didn't see a huge amount. I saw a little bit towards the end of it, I think it was. And I don't know really what happened. They just didn't really get the weight of runs behind them that you'd normally expect from the Australians. I think it was shown in that third match when Smith and Labuschagne finally did start scoring runs that they're in a much better position. But I think they were probably hugely disappointed that they then, after winning the first game so comfortably, they lost that second game by so much. And I think it is disappointing. That's the only real word I think the Aussies have to say about it.
Yeah, and like you alluded to there, Smith and Labuschagne got onto the runs in a big way in this third test. And we'll go on to why it almost feels like a loss for Australia. Smith scored 131 in the first innings and 81 in the second. Labuschagne scored 91 in the first dig and 70 in the second. And there was lots of orders throughout the sort of lower order and middle order. But I was really impressed with, this is a difficult name, so don't laugh at it. Pukaviski's opening. If you haven't seen him, he looks like the most Australian man ever. Mullet and a blonde moustache. He's incredible. And he's got a 60 on his opening innings for Australia, so fair play to him. And India just almost had the same problem Australia had in the last test and couldn't get really any weight of runs and only scored 244. Oh, no, sorry. Australia... Oh, hang on. They had a massive task at the end. They needed 407. Sorry. Someone put me in rice because I'm obviously broken. So they need 407 to win the test. But that's obviously not going to happen. But India, let's face it, were in a difficult situation in that last day. But Toby, how did they survive that great lineup?
I don't know. To quote Chris Kamara, I don't know, Jeff. It was unbelievable. I think Rishabh Pant played arguably the innings of his life, almost absolutely smashing the ball to all parts, scored 97, I think, in the end, about a 90 strike rate. And Chhateshwar Pujara as well, just dead batting it the whole time, scoring 70, I think he got. And then it finished off at the end with Vihari scoring one of the slowest 23s I think ever. Strike rate of 14, which I think it's not bad. It puts Dom Sibley to shame. And then Ashwin as well at the other end, scoring 39, just sort of guided them home by the end of it. And I think it was quite impressive the way India batted. They sort of not sure collapsed, but struggled a bit in the first innings, but then managed to really just keep going and going and going. When the Australian bowling attack has been so dominant in Test cricket for the past few years. I don't know what you thought about it, Dom.
Yeah, I thought of it as a positive long-term. Because hear me out, Australia probably, I'm going to say, might lose this series because they've had pretty much effectively two losses because they should have won this game, it's fair to say, and they've blown it. And I'm going to be honest, I can see England almost doing the same thing in Australia. He's maybe having a bad first test. And you know what? The gabatoir, as they like to call it, because Australians are Australians. They've got no subtlety. they might try and build momentum. But I think one of the games in Australia is a day-night game. So Jimmy and Broadie can really get the ball moving. And if they just keep losing games, I can easily see England maybe getting out of there with the two wins. And you never know, if one game's rained off, that's eligible for two all. And you never know, we might be able to bat out one. And I know this is all very circumstances, and I know the Ashes are down the road in a year's time, and we're both very excited for that. But I this gave me hope for the first time that England can go over there since 2010-11. I haven't really felt, bar 2013-14, and we know what happened there, that England can go win this and win it well. Australia don't look like a good side, and I know that's quite harsh to say, and they'll probably go on and win now, but I think India, whilst they've played well, I think Australia let themselves down, if that makes sense. And I know that's quite harsh, and going on to talking about them letting themselves down after the Amazon test series went far out of its way to say how good Australia were, how they weren't going to play dirty cricket, how they were going to be lovely lads, and they were all going to smile and make everyone cups of tea. Tim Payne, the captain, was caught calling, well, let's say nasty words to Ashwin, and Smith allegedly messed up the sort of crease area, making it hard for the batsman to know where their middle stump was. It's become a bit of controversy, and Justin Langer's kicking bins again. Toby, what's your thought on this? I'm not going to say outrage, because it's not outrage. It's just not nice cricket, if that makes sense. What's your thoughts?
I'd say that the Tim Payne thing is the bigger thing for me. I think obviously the Smith looked bad, but I think it's all that could almost be Smith just being Smith. We've seen him in the test, the documentary, of just shadow batting everywhere. And I think he did just look like he was standing on the crease, wishing he was batting rather than fielding. but I say the Tim Payne's the disappointment for me, because I've been sort of a big almost advocate for Tim Payne. I'd say I've really liked him as a captain, and it's hard for me almost to say that about the Australians. Yeah. I think he did save Australian cricket a little bit. He does seem like just a nice guy, but it just surprised me a huge amount the way the chat he was giving to Ashwin, because normally he does chat to the batsman and comes out with just some funny comments. I think it was last time it was the stuff he was talking to Rishabh Pant about babysitting for Virat Kohli or something. And I think it's just the step up, and just it's not banter, it's abuse, I'd say, almost, to quote Justin Langer. And it's just disappointing, really. I don't know what you thought about it, Dom.
I think you make a really good point on he was almost the saviour of Australian cricket. If we go down the line of Australian captains since 1989, it was a hard-nosed bloke. It was then a hard-nosed bloke. It was then a hard-nosed bloke. Then it was Ricky Ponting, who possibly is the toughest human being made, and you throw a rock at him and the rock breaks sort of guy. Michael Clarke, who was also very tough, and this nasty Australian side sort of grew and bubbled up. And then Steve Smith, who obviously was caught cheating. And then Tim Payne comes along, and he's quite a nice guy. You know, you almost like him as an English bloke. And then he says that Edgbaston's not in his top 15 intimidating place. And you go, oh, no, we don't like you. So I think what is noticeable is that maybe, and this might be me reading into it a bit, and I think he's had to be this nice guy to save Australian cricket. And I think in the heat of competition, and I think England players will do this, I think Irish players, I think every nation in the world has it in any sport, there will be moments where you get angry, and I think that's fair to say. But I think as captain, you really do need to bite your lip, and he's come out and apologised. But it wasn't good for Australia to have the same sort of issues of the ex-captain and the current captain looking bad very publicly in India's triumph, if that makes sense. And I'm really excited for the fourth test match, and I think it has been a little bit tasty this series, so hopefully it'll be a great game and India might win it. Nah, just kidding. Toby, who do you think last or test, or do you think it'll be a draw?
I was going to say that could be a hope, because then it's sort of win-win. Neither side really comes out on top. Good for the England side. I think the stats and just the cricket thought really should be behind Australia. They're playing at the Gabba. They've never really lose there. India have had so many more injuries. I think they're onto their 20th player now for the series, which seems mental that they've had to change almost their starting 11 completely. With, I think, only Bumrah, Pujara, Rahane and Vihari, who's now injured as well, possibly keeping their places for the whole series. Oh, and Ashwin, I guess. So there's four players likely to play the whole series for the Indian side, which seems pretty mental. But there is a little bit of me that just thinks that India can do it. And I don't know why. It'll be Rishabh Pant will score a 200 ball, 400 or something mental like that. Or Ashwin will bowl and get 9 wickets in the first innings and 10 in the second and imitate Jim Laker.
Yeah.
But I don't know what it is. There's something that just has a feeling that India might be able to pull something out of the bag the way that the Australians have performed the last couple of matches. What are you, Dom? Who are you predicting the win for?
Now, as a very negative Englishman who's watched England cricket fail, let's be honest, we have had some very tough periods to support England. Australia rarely, and I mean this very rarely, have 3 bad games on the trot. I think in the Ashes especially, they've, bar 2013 series, they've always been good, even when they haven't had the best side going out. So I'm going to say Australia will end this sort of 2-game bogey period and get the win. And I know that's not what we want to hear, but I can just see, especially at the Gabba, I can just see, I don't know why, I can just see Steve Smith getting another 100, Labuschagne creepily sort of following and scoring another like 90-odd and not quite get 100, but making the score unaccessible for India to win. I'm going to say Australia will win. So now you've said India, I've said Australia, it's going to be a draw.
Definitely.
Right. It's time for a quiz. Now, because Toby has just had an exam today, the day of recording, I'm going to treat him to a new game called Bouncy Yorker Stalker. Now, we all know Toby's hobby is stalking cricketers, but this time we've turned it into a game. So I'm going to give him a bouncer. So that's a short fact. So, for example, we'll do an example one here. He is 19. We'll then do a Yorker, so a sporting fact. His high score is 41, and his best bowling figures are 4 overs, 3 wickets for no runs. Then we're going to give Toby a stalking fact. Now, Toby should be able to get it by the stalking fact. The stalking fact is, for this example, Paul Collingwood once questioned him about why he didn't have shoestrings in his Converse. The answer was because he couldn't do his laces at his age. Just out of interest, who do you think that was as the example?
So they have 19 now, I'm assuming English, and they're pretty average. I don't really know. Where is this you, Dom? Yeah.
Thanks, mate. All right. Okay, let's go on to the game. I've done 5, so, because let's be honest, everything in cricket rolls around the number 5. That's and true. You need to get, I'm going to say 4 to win, okay? Yeah. So you get all 3 clues, and then if you get 4 of these English cricketers right, you win the game. Okay, so let's start with the first one. So my bouncer, my short fact is he's 1.88 metres tall. Okay, that's your first fact. He's relatively tall, nearly 2 metres. Yorker, so his sporting fact, his high score in test matches is 81, which broke a test record. Now, I'm not going to say which test record it is. Now, Stalker, his favourite pub as a teenager, Smackwater Jacks. Now, judging by that laugh, I think you know who it is.
Yeah, I do. I think it's James Anderson, I'm going to go with.
Anderson, Smackwater Jacks there. If you want to sponsor Smackwater Jacks, we're desperate for anything, really. Especially, it sounds great, the way Jimmy's talked about it. It sounds like a great pub. And I think when we do our tour shows, I think, yeah. I'd be interested.
We'll do one there, I reckon, yeah.
We'll do one in Burnley. Right, bouncer for the next player. I'll give you a little clue here. He did play the bouncer very well. My England cap number was 625. 65, so he was the 625th player to play for England. So relatively recent, it's fair to say, or not, well, depends what you class as recent. So he's one of the few men, this is the Yorker, by the way, he's one of the few men to score 300 in 3 successive test matches. Ashes test matches. So he scored 300 in 3 tests in a row in the Ashes. So this is where we get to Stalker. His nickname is Shermanator, given to him by the Ashes bowling lineup of the 2005 Aussies. So that great side of Warren, McGrath, and they're trying to get into this player's head. What they're calling the Shermanator. Now, Toby's looking to the stars, and I don't think he's got it here.
No, what was the bouncer again? Sorry.
So the bouncer, so the short fact was his England cap number, so the number you get given when you get given a cap, was 625.
Okay.
So he's played 2005. He's quite a good batsman, 300s in a row, and he's played around 62, and he was number 265. I'm going to be interested to see who you think it is. Who do you think it is?
Well, immediately after the first two clues, it was Alistair Cook, but I know he didn't play in 2005 Ashes, so it's not him. I'm thinking it's the Shermanator. I'm thinking someone like Michael Vaughan, maybe?
Now, I haven't seen this film. I'm afraid you're wrong, but the Shermanator was a joke about a ginger person. Does that have your 2005 team out of interest?
2005 team. So they had Triscothic, Strauss, Vaughan, KP, Bell, Flintoff.
Oh, you've said him.
Is it?
Obviously, you've got it wrong. It's Ian Bell, I'm afraid.
Ian Bell. Oh, okay.
So you now need to get three right to win the game. So you have to get all the rest of these right. But if you get two right, you get a tie. We almost, you know what we should do? We should make this a competition that spans. So we'll have a leaderboard and we'll keep it up to date on our Instagram. I think that's what we should do. So the test master is the person who wins. They create the test for the next week. But if you lose, you play in the next one, if that makes sense.
That's a good shout. I like that.
I think give some gravitas to these games. So, Ravi... Oh, that's ruined that one. Right. Right, okay. Oh, no. Right, okay, we'll move... Right. It was going to be Ravi Bhopara.
Yeah, oh, no. What were the clues then, anyway, Don? I'll have a guess.
15, bouncer. That was the bouncer. Yorker. This all-rounder was pivotal in the 2019 T20 Blast Final, helping his boyhood county in the last match he played for them turn the final around and win their first T20 trophy. And the stalker fact was his dad owned a sweet shop, and it's fair to say he enjoyed pick and mix. And his nickname was Puppy. That would have been good things to know about Ravi Bhopara. I'm very sorry. I will come up with one on the fly. Okay, so bouncer. This is the next one. So this is now the third one. Bouncer, I'm 6'6" and an absolute club hero. Okay, that's your bouncer. That's your short fact. Yorker, after a big concussion, my county won the one-day double, which I was a major part of playing in the Lords final. Now, stalker, I was a chef at Hooters, the first Hooters in the UK in Nottingham. We're very proud to go to the university where that city has that phenomenal honour. I could get free chicken when I wanted, and it's fair to say I still love a cheeky Nando's. Who do you think that person was?
Okay, so 6'6", and I'm assuming from Nottingham, would suggest Stuart Broad.
Oh, he's gone Broad. It was Luke Fletcher.
Oh, that makes sense, to be fair.
I'm going to be honest, Molly King's not going to go out with a chef from Hooters. But yeah, I listened to an interview with Luke Fletcher, and he is my hero. He's an absolute hero of mine. And he says he cycles to Trent Bridge every day now, and he used to be a chef at Hooters. And he says, I can't remember the exact line, but it's certainly to the line of, yeah, the knots took away my black card because I used to have it every day or something. And it's fair to say he's a man who doesn't look like an international athlete, but yeah, he's such a good bowler. Right, so this is the fourth one. Okay, so bouncer, short fact. So you need to get the next two right to get the tie. So bouncer, 17 test fifers. Okay, Yorker, I had to quit cricket because of my bowling action disintegrated a bone in my body. Okay, and stalker, I was arrested drunk driving whilst trying to buy screwdrivers to save my cat.
Oh my God, okay. That is...
I will say for the record, this man does not have a drink driving test. He was negative, so it's all okay, and the cat was saved. But yeah, 17 disintegrated bone, and it's quite an interesting character, and I'm quite interested to see who you think this was.
This is a tough one. Can I ask, is he like an England player or is it...
Was an England player. Had to retire.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Disintegrated.
Ah, okay. I'm feeling Simon Jones could be a good option, but I'm not 100% sure. I'm assuming it's around this sort of that time, maybe like Harmison or Hoggard, but I don't know if any of them retired because of injury.
I will give you a hint because you're sort of fishing in the wrong pond here.
Okay.
It's a bit later. It's someone we've talked about on this podcast.
Someone we've talked about on the podcast. Yeah. Okay. 17 Fifers. Is it Chris Tremlett?
No, it was Graham Swan, so I'm afraid you lose. Bouncer's a Yorker Stalker. I'm very sorry to say, Tony, that I don't need to do another one because you only got two. And oh, hang on. No, you need one more, don't you? Because you've got
three, did I, for the tie? I'm on one right now, I think.
Very sorry. Yeah. Well, that makes up for me messing up the random part. It's fair to say we will continue getting games out there and podcasts out there in the near future. We will make a sort of Champions League style sort of leaderboard between me and Toby. So next week I'll come up with a game and Toby will have to answer some questions, or maybe we might mix it up depending on how we're feeling. But there will be a podcast coming out soon. And thank you very much for listening. Toby, thanks for giving us some great insight, especially with your exams. I hope they go well because I know you've got a few coming up. And thanks for listening, and give us a follow at Sticky Wickets. And I think this new year could be really good. We've got a lot of things planned and me and Toby are really excited. So go well.
Yeah, go well. Cheers, mate.
Cheers.
This is University Radio Nottingham.